BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on BCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, all across this nation, churches have been closed due to COVID-19. And while some states quickly rescinded their strict rules upon churches, others have been more reluctant and have ordered church doors now to remain closed. Some churches opened up and others saying, no way. Well, then last week, President Trump declared churches to be essential, doing what he could to have rules change from the CDC. And as such, more states are loosening the reins, while yet other governors have been digging their heels into the ground. Some are allowing 10 people or fewer to gather for worship, some 25 and fewer. Some have been more generous than that. But today we're going to head over to the West Coast in particular for an update on a number of cases that have been going on. And at the center of several of these has been the Pacific Justice Institute. Joining us today is Brad Dacus, the president and founder of Pacific Justice Institute. They defend the religious freedoms, parental rights, and other civil liberties of people who cannot defend themselves. Brad was a legislative assistant to U.S. Senator Phil Graham, went on to receive his Juris Doctor from University of Texas School of Law, and founded Pacific Justice Institute in 1997. Brad, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll talk about some of the specific states in just a short time, but just on a general question, as we take a look at this issue across the country of religious freedom amidst this COVID-19, By what authority, Brad, have we seen governors and states across this nation close down churches, not just for a few weeks to deal with this matter, but months on end? What authority granted them the ability to do so?
Well, states have granted their governors the ability to do so under things like California has the Emergency Services Act to empower them to do what's necessary, order what's necessary, to maintain order and safety, et cetera. For things like massive pandemic outbreaks and things. The problem, though, is that they have not been kept in check. Some states have loosely applied the restrictions that are a part of that legislation. So that's the problem. That's why we have some of our lawsuits going on right now to hold that in check. And then moving forward, we at Pacific Justice intend to also implement and make some recommendations for states to adopt to amend their state constitutions down the road, so that we never have this kind of abuse of authority again.
Yeah, and let's visit California. That's where you're based, your headquarters there. We've seen some pretty draconian orders in place, and such that this coming Sunday, there were thousands of pastors that already predetermined they're opening up for services. Tell us what's going on in California.
Yeah, we're talking not just about a few dozen. We're talking about hundreds. Some estimate up to 3,000 churches will be opening up this Sunday. And that was before the governor, Gavin Newsom, came out with the announcement that churches could reopen with certain guidelines that are very unreasonable. But it's very encouraging, though, that we are going to see many churches. Some of them are in what I call safe zones, where the city that they're in, or the county that they're in, if they're in an unincorporated, has already come out and said, we approve churches to reopen. We don't care what the governor says. So let it be, you know. And others are in places where they don't have legal authority by their city or county, but the sheriff or the police department says, don't worry about it. We're not going to do anything if you have a church service. So the number of those have already opened in California in direct defiance of what the governor was saying. But on the 31st, that's going to be a very pivotal time for church reopenings, and we at Pacific Justice Institute are already working with those pastors, encouraging them to contact us ahead of time to fill out an attorney-client agreement so we can represent them without charge if it's necessary and immediate, which it may be in some places where there's not exactly the most tolerance, like the San Francisco Bay Area and the city of Los Angeles.
So the churches that are planning to really move forward this coming Sunday, May 31st, are they going over and above what the governor is saying is allowable?
Some of them, yes, without question. I mean, this governor said in his guidelines. He says you can open, churches can reopen. However, you have to only have 25% of the occupancy can be filled, and no more than 100, whatever is less. So let's say you have a little white steeple church with, you know, 50, occupancy 50. They can only have 12. Or let's say you have a large church of 5,000. They can only have 100 in their church. Now, there's several ways of getting around that, and we're going to see Pacific Justice is going to talk about that on our conference call this Thursday, tomorrow at 2 p.m. We're going to be discussing on our live Zoom. People can register on our website, pji.org. We're encouraging pastors and church leaders, definitely, because we're going to talk to them all across the country about the different states, the new restrictions, and how to get around those restrictions legally and practically so churches can move ahead. And we've found, for example, for California, we have found more than one way to get around those guidelines and still technically stay within the law.
Okay, let's just get up that info again. You're hosting a Zoom call. That's tomorrow afternoon. Is that correct?
That's right. Tomorrow afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific time. So it'd be 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be 2 p.m. It's about an hour and a half. But we're going to have a number of attorneys on it. It's going to be very understandable, very practical. Our bottom line goal with these is to enable churches to reopen as quickly as possible and also as safely as possible. And we're put lots of time and expertise into doing this so we can serve churches. And we'll represent them anywhere in the country without charge if they follow what we say in our guidelines and our checklist and all the resources we have on our website to do that. So it's really a good time for great empowerment for churches, but it's also a great time also for great revival and opportunities for evangelism. We have a project, for example, called Homeschool Co-ops, and this is something that we've launched, and we have information on our website how churches can start church homeschool co-ops in their church. We have roughly 40%, according to Pew Research, have said that parents have said they're going to want to homeschool, have their kids at home learning. The door is wide open for parents to experiment with Christian homeschooling education programs instead of the public schools. And with that comes a tremendous church growth because as the kids participate, parents will be coming to church. So we're going to talk about those great opportunities that are opening up for great revival and outreach and evangelism and saving, of course, a lot of kids. So there's great opportunities that we also want to make sure the churches and pastors don't miss.
Okay, so yeah, they register at pji.org.
That is correct, pji.org for Pacific Justice Institute.
Great. And perhaps this is the very reason why we're seeing some national stories coming out speaking disparagingly of homeschool families and are concerned about parents indoctrinating their children, whereby their children will not be exposed to the, you know, to society as a whole, and society may have different values than what parents have. I mean, there's really an assault coming that's been launched here against homeschoolers recently.
Oh, yes. Yes, there definitely has. And a part of that has been, you know, like Harvard. I'm sure you mentioned that's probably
yes.
One of the things you're talking about.
Right.
And that wasn't just a, you know, an ad hoc professor. That's someone who actually heads up a department, a child advocacy department of Harvard. That is their worldview. They are afraid. They're worried that homeschooling is going to boom. Well, we at Pacific Justice, who had already started this church homeschool co-op project before that article even came out, because we saw it was very evident, and the Pew Research study has validated that. You know, Santa Ana School District has already one-third of the kids, and it's a very liberal school district in Southern California, one-third, the parents have already said, our kids are going to stay at home next year, even though the school's opening, they're staying at home, they're going to do online. That's, you know, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to, we're working very aggressively now to empower churches all across the United States to start these church homeschool co-ops. They're easy to do, great outreach, great church growth potential, great revival, and saving millions of children potentially from the spiritual genocide that we forecast will be witnessing, as it was expected to take place this fall in 17 major cities all throughout California, but also in other states, Fort Worth, for example, Texas. This this could be literally a godsend in that it may allow us to save millions of children from the spiritual genocide they were going to be exposed to with the radical LGBTQ propaganda all the way down to kindergarten. So, yeah, we may not see it at first glance, but I actually see a tremendous, tremendous opportunity that we don't want pastors to ignore, but to seize the day on and to see a real turning point potentially in this country.
Brad Dacus is with us today from the Pacific Justice Institute. Brad, what impact did President Trump's announcement have last week on California and other states as well when he declared churches as essential? He also said in America we need more prayer, not less. What impact did that have?
Legally, it had very little impact legally.
Mm-hmm.
That said, politically and culturally, it was very powerful. It was very direct, even a little bit threatening to the state, saying, if you don't do it, I'm gonna come down on you. People don't know exactly what he was talking about when he said that. Maybe there's grants, federal programs. The states, I think, are fearful because they know this president will have their staff look under every rock and say, how can we punish the states that are still being Neanderthal and draconian and hostile towards churches being treated equally and fairly? So I think it's the unknown is what's really pressuring governments, and then what he said is going to be very inspirational and empowering to churches and people across the country saying, okay, the president said it, you know, we may not have the law technically behind us, but enough is enough. And I think it's going to be the tipping point for many churches across the United States to open their doors coming Sunday.
So you've got Governor Newsom that's starting to loosen the reins in California, but you've got several federal lawsuits going on in California. What happens to those suits now?
Yes, that's a very important question. We filed a lawsuit last Thursday against the governor. We waited for the proper timing. There were a couple others that filed lawsuits before, but they were too premature. And even the Attorney General Barr, in his letter to the governor, pointed out those cases and said those cases are differentiated. They were too early. They didn't argue some basic points that should have been argued. Well, we did that in our case. Our case was perfectly timed. We had clear unequal treatment under phase two. Restaurants were open, everything else, but not churches. Schools were open, but not churches. So we had the facts. We had the timing. We filed a lawsuit. And then the governor has come down this Monday with new guidelines suddenly. And I think our major federal lawsuit has had an impact on that because I think it parallels so closely with the Attorney General's opinion as well. So the problem, though, is that that these guidelines are still way too restrictive. As I mentioned, they require only 25% occupancy are allowed or up to 100 people, whatever is less, not greater, less. So it's still draconian. Today the governor came out reportedly and announced phase three. So salons are open. Just about everything is open. They have some faith and health restrictions, but nothing is stringent as was placed upon churches. And that's what we're addressing in this lawsuit.
We're going to take a quick break. Brad Dacus with us from Pacific Justice Institute. We're discussing religious freedom amidst COVID-19. And not only will we be looking at California, we're also going to travel north to Oregon and learn what's happening there, but also what's happening to our nation as a whole. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, in an evolutionary sense, what do the terms advanced and primitive mean?
Chris, primitive animals are thought to be those that evolved long ago, which gave rise to more and more advanced types. Single-cell organisms are the most primitive, and then marine invertebrates, and up to fish, amphibians, mammals, and eventually man, the most advanced of all. Within each mammal type, evolutionists say that the more advanced ones are the ones that are modern, but extinct varieties were hardly primitive. Chris, the whole concept of primitive advances an evolutionary idea which is wrong on the face of it. Evolution did not happen. God created each basic category, much as we see it today. None is more advanced than the other. Each is complex. And that's the way I see it from a Back to Genesis perspective.
Visit our website at icr.org. I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
Religious freedom amidst COVID-19, our topic today with Brad Dacus. He is the president and founder of the Pacific Justice Institute. And as we mentioned, tomorrow for pastors across the nation, they are holding a Zoom call, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. And you can register for that at pji.org, pji.org. Now, Brad, we were talking about this lawsuit that you've got going in California. So that lawsuit is going to continue on. It's just not declared moot at this point as a result of the governor starting to open the doors?
Yeah, it's continuing on. We were hoping that we're going to have to declare it moot. But no, it is so restrictive. It's so unreasonable. You have schools opening up with hundreds of kids, 5 days a week, for the summer school programs. That's all allowed, no problem. The churches, for just 1 hour a week, you're not even allowed more than 100 people, mm-hmm. no matter how big the church is. It's just so unfair and unequal in its treatment that we're definitely moving ahead with this case. And it's a very important case because we at Pacific Justice, when we file a case, we file it to win, not just a knee-jerk reaction and, let's attack the governor, let's file a lawsuit. No, we're very, very strategic. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a very important case, especially since we have bad case law that we have to overcome because of some cases that were filed by others that will remain nameless, beforehand. So we're moving on that and we're making the best of it. And I think we have a very good chance of prevailing and with some good case law moving forward.
Great. And I know, though, that if all of a sudden this is dropped, I mean, what would stop the state of California from doing this, a few months down the road? If COVID-20 comes or whatever it may be, that's why, it seems so important that these lawsuits continue to hold the government in check for future occasions.
Oh, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. We need, long-term, we need to make sure this doesn't happen again. One way is for litigation,
mm-hmm.
and not to allow this system to pass by. And we're very optimistic that before the United States Supreme Court, because of President Trump's judicial appointments, we're in the end, whether our case or someone else's, we're going to prevail and see a tightening of these powers of governors. People wonder, why it's important judicial appointments. Their ability to meet at church Sunday morning says it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Those in states that have Republican governors, and I don't want to politicize this, but it is what it is. I'm just saying it. Those in states with Republican governors, the general rule, they can go to church with very little difficulty, relatively speaking, versus those in blue states with Democrat governors that have been so unjust and unfair and unequal in how they're treating churches. And it is a blatant hostile way compared to those with Republican governors. So who's in control in terms of the White House, who's in control of the Senate, but also who's in control of the governor's mansions across the country is having a direct impact on whether or not we can worship, whether or not we can go to church and have our home Bible study meetings. It's very, very a serious violation of our religious freedoms. And now we're hoping that churches and pastors will be motivated moving forward to register every one of their members to vote and to encourage them to vote. And in states like California that have ballot harvesting or ballot gathering, that they use our resources to enable them to do that, to make sure every single person in their church votes this coming election. We see the results of it. If the Senate shifts in another direction, we will not have good justices appointed to the United States Supreme Court, even if President Trump is reelected.
Yeah.
So that's what's at stake, and I think this will hopefully be a major wake-up call to those who are so much in the clouds of spirituality that they forgot their responsibility, their God-given responsibility to be faithful with the rights and opportunities God has given us to glorify Him, including our ability to worship Sunday morning.
As our friend Jelaine Appling has so often said, elections have consequences, and this really bears it out. What we're seeing here, we see the consequences for good or for ill as it relates to this matter. And indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we have the stewardship. We've been given the stewardship with our vote. and it's required of stewards that a man be found faithful. And how we handle that vote is a stewardship between us and God, and it's critically important that we exercise that in a very just way. Brad, not only have you been engaged in California, but let's travel a little bit north of you to Oregon as well, where it's been back and forth, different levels of court. We've seen one level of court rule one way, and then that get rescinded by another court to be rescinded by another court. Bring us up to date on what's going on in Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon's an interesting state. We at Pacific Justice, we have an office there. It's the one of several states that have an office, a full-time office. Our attorney there, Ray Hackey, did research on the limitations of the governor's powers and discovered that Oregon's constitution and state laws are more restrictive than other states. And so we went and filed a lawsuit on behalf to basically strike down the shutdown order completely as applied to everyone, churches, businesses. And this is after 60 days where the crisis and everything is long gone, if you will. And we see tremendous abuse. So we filed a lawsuit. The judge, appointed by the governor, I might add, in Baker County, in Oregon, he ruled against the governor and ruled that her executive emergency order was null and void, immediately liberating everyone, every church, every business in the state of Oregon. That was a fantastic, decisive victory. The case law is very decisive on this. In fact, the case law, the statutory law in the Constitution requires that the governor only has 28 days, effectively 30 days, to issue this kind of emergency order. And then after that, there has to be a 3/5 vote of approval by the state assembly and the state senate there in Oregon in order for it to be renewed another 60 days. Well, or another 30 days. So that never happened. She didn't even request it. It was never voted on. She's just acting as if somehow she has this unlimited powers. The judge saw right through it. The same day, the attorneys for the governor, worked for the state, the establishment of the state of Oregon, taxpayer funded. They had already worked it out with the chief justice of the state Supreme Court of Oregon so that when that judgment came down, before the day was over, an emergency stay was granted by the chief justice for the Oregon Supreme Court.
Wow.
Four of the seven of those justices were appointed by the governor, but it's not over because there was just a stay that you can't enforce this preliminary injunction, and now they're reviewing it. The governor has now been, the chief justice of the Supreme Court has asked the lower court judge to either vacate his earlier decision on the preliminary injunction or state more in detail in writing why he feels justified in it. And he has till today to file that. And if he files it or if he does nothing, either way, we're going to be arguing for the state Supreme Court in Oregon and defending churches and implicitly businesses as well in this process. So it's ongoing. And then even if they decide to rule, okay, we're still going to stay the injunction, it will still likely go back down to the lower court for hearing on the merits, and in which case that could take a number of weeks, even months. But we're not surrendering. We're going to keep fighting there in the state of Oregon because other states are watching it, other governors are watching it, and we know the governor of Wisconsin already had their hands slapped for going beyond it. And so we're hoping to send another message to other governors across the country.
Well, we understand Governor Kate Brown there in Oregon, she restricted faith-based gatherings to 25 people, but restaurants, bars, gyms, they could host larger crowds. And, Brad, it seems to me that there's something in our Constitution somewhere that talks about religious freedom, but I don't see mention of bars, restaurants, and gyms.
Well, you haven't read the 30th Amendment gym clause?
Yeah.
The gym clause of the Constitution? Yeah. So, exactly. It's really insane when you think about it because it's major grotesque unequal treatment on its face, but it's also unequal treatment in terms of the fact that we have clear fundamental rights protection under the First Amendment of the Constitution. The government, unlike the bars and other things, where they don't have to show a compelling state interest to close them down or to limit them and have restrictions narrowly tailored, for whatever that interest is, we have that special protection in the Constitution for our houses of worship.
Yeah.
That's what makes this so shocking, and I believe in the end will be very compelling for the Supreme Court to give great correction to some of these what's been taking place.
Yeah.
To hopefully prevent it from happening again, along with amendments to the state constitutions that we expect to be adopted in red states, and hopefully some blue states will learn their lessons.
Well, what's so interesting in all of this, I mean, if you're a pastor in some places of Oregon, you could be jailed for going to church with 25 other people on Sunday morning, but could join those same people and more at some dine-in restaurant for lunch, no penalty there.
Right, right. It is very insane.
Yeah.
The beaches in California were flooded with people, just overly crowded with people. Costco doesn't have a line anymore. You have to wait in, though. It's just stuffed with people. Shopping malls were open in Sacramento. Major shopping malls fully open, no limitations on people. That's, you know, so states like California, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, New Jersey, New York, you know, New England, those areas are, Virginia, are areas that are really begging for litigation, and in the end, we'll be paying a price that is very huge in terms of not only the economy and the economics of their states and being able to you know, match their budgets with proper revenue, but also in terms of health and safety. We see that alcohol consumption has gone up 55%. The number of suicides in Northern California this last month is greater than all of last year.
Wow.
Suicides are spiking across the country. And then cancer. Those states that are blue states that are keeping people from being able to get regular checkups, where there, a percentage of them will find out that they have cancer, they're delaying the discovery, which means they're delaying the potential success to live and survive the cancer, because when you delay it several months, you're allowing the cancer to spread and go from stage one to stage two, stage three, and stage four. So we're going to have more deaths of people dying of cancer in these intolerant blue states, increase more suicide, greater economic harm, greater domestic violence. These are in those blue states that are not listening to people and allowing, their personal politics to bring down the economy for this election, to prevail over doing what they're supposed to do, which is serving the people and being humane in doing so.
And we probably will not have nightly statistics on the news telling us how many people died that day because of the restrictions put in place by the governor.
You're right. Not yet. But those stats will
yeah.
come out.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And we will see notable increases in people dying of cancer over the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in blue states than in red states. And that's something that unfortunately has been ignored, and then of course the suicides are irrebuttable as well, and that's why we need to really be responsible in moving forward to make sure that that these governors are held accountable. We're doing it in the courts, Pacific Justice Institute. We're doing it in the courts. We need to also do it at the ballot box, and we also need to adopt amendments to the state constitution that we at Pacific Justice Institute are working so hard to put together for all 50 states.
The website is pji.org, pji.org. Again, a Zoom call tomorrow afternoon, Thursday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. You can register at pji.org. We've got just a little bit more to discuss with our guests, but if you'd like to get on board, our number 800-733-9829.
Attacks continue against the Bible. Some accuse the Bible of not being historically accurate. Some insist it's a book written by man filled with error. But did you know that archaeology continues to confirm what's written in Scripture? In the fully illustrated hardcover book, Evidence for the Bible, you are introduced to the world of biblical archaeology. Using full-color pictures and an easily read format, you will see that what has been dug up from the earth confirms the places and events from Scripture. Rulers and kings are documented, battles and their outcomes are confirmed, and details of prophetic utterances are precisely what are known to have happened. This book takes you on a fascinating journey during which the traveler never knows what may turn up with the next trial. It's hard to put this book down as one captivating page leads to another. Evidence for the Bible is available for a donation of $30. Call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Fred Dacus is our guest here today on Crosstalk. He is the president and founder of the Pacific Justice Institute. And friends, if you have a question as it relates to religious liberty amidst COVID-19, our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829, or a brief comment on this issue. Some of you living in states where the doors have been open for religious liberty, some of you have just been recently back in your church services once again. All of this coming to a head in so many different locations due to suits that have been filed by so many wonderful organizations. We've seen the people like Brad Dacus involved, Matt Staver, Alliance Defending Freedom, and other groups as well that have been fighting for your religious rights. Pacific Justice is holding a Zoom call tomorrow, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. You can register at pji.org. Brad, you're involved in other states as well, beyond California and Oregon. Give us a glimpse as to what's happening.
Oh, certainly. In the state of Washington, the governor was totally against any service, even drive-in services. So you have people, you know, drive into Sonic, you know, and get a hamburger and sit there, or just sit in the parking lot at Walmart, do their work. But they could not sit in the parking lot of a church while they're having on the radio a church service, you know, through the local station there at the church. That was outrageous. But we went ahead and sought out the governor on this, and we sent a demand letter. The governor didn't respond. Well, the governor says, no, you cannot do this. We sent a demand letter saying this is unconstitutional, and by the way, the church is doing it. Here's the date. Here's the times. You're welcome to attend the church service if you'd like. And the governor did not show up, did not respond, and completely acquiesced. So we at Pacific Justice blew the horn announcing churches in Washington State, you're now free to have drive-in services. And then some other cases came down in other parts of the country. On that, even the Mississippi, the Attorney General pounced, a small town in Mississippi that was going to find every member of the church that attended church that Sunday $500. It was a drive-in service. So that was a real success. Then we went back to the governor's office with five pastors of large churches to negotiate more leniency so that churches could open up more freely. That governor has been unreasonable and hostile. And you know, as you mentioned, it's those kind of the limitations are just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So we're right now examining Washington State and looking at where they are. Things are changing all the time, and the more a state reopens, if you will, as far as like and decides to let businesses reopen, but maintains unfair restrictions on churches and synagogues, the more vulnerable they are to a challenge in court. So that's why we at Pacific Justice Institute are looking at all the states and watching what they're doing for unequal treatment and unequal proportional reopening policies. That is the big mistake that those governments are making, like in the state of Washington, Oregon, California, and Illinois, and New Jersey, New York, et cetera. So we're very much sensitive to that. Moving forward, we're also giving real specific counsel to churches, you know, from Long Island to, I mean, all over the country on their individual situation so they can assess their risk in view of the law and in view of their church needs and how best to get around that. That's one of the most important things we're going to talk about on Thursday, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time, is how churches can meander around some of these outrageous restrictions and accomplish their goals and have their church congregations. And it's actually very positive that there are ways to meander around it. Those restrictions are still, as far as we're concerned, still unequal treatment, still unconstitutional, violation of free exercise clause, establishment clause. But we can help churches in the interim make the best of it in very significant ways. And so that's what we're doing moving forward. Like, for example, outdoor services, we're going to talk about that, how those can very easily be pushed forward, even amidst some of these outrageous restrictions by some of these blue states and others.
Let's go to the phone lines here. We have Holly calling from Wamedee, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just curious. I've been a Lutheran my entire life, and I come from a long line of Lutherans. And so I'm very disappointed as I see how the Lutheran Church, the LCA Lutherans, are handling going forward through this crisis, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
They are still considering all these drive-in services, and it doesn't sound like they're even going to consider having in-person for a long time and making it sound like it may never go back to what it was. And they're concerned about singing because we're afraid that we're going to be spreading the virus more than we would if we were just talking. And so it just confuses me. I feel like they're falling victim to this false information, and I am concerned that the church is going to change entirely from what it has always been. And so I wonder if maybe you had some insight as to why they are handling it this way and if there's a lot of other ones considering the same.
Ali, thank you for the call. Any response, Brett?
Yes, I understand exactly where she's coming from, and I've seen churches like that acting very much on fear, irrationally, if you will, to a great degree. Part of that's just on false information they receive. For example, singing. The governor of California said that he strongly recommends churches that do meet not to sing at all, not to worship at all.
Mm.
Well, as it turns out, if you have proper distancing, the 6 feet, you can cough and sneeze, and the droplets aren't going to make it to the other person because this is not an aerosol-type transmission, which is influenza. This is a droplet transmission, which means it doesn't go nearly as far, and it's over. So people singing, which has much less intensity of thrust than a sneeze or a cough, is by no means a threat as long as people have adequate safe distancing of 6 feet in their enclosed house of worship. As far as on the outside, outdoors is even safer, much safer with the sun, the air, I think that's something that churches definitely need to be looking into moving forward as well. If they're in that situation where they, for some reason, don't feel free to have a church service at this time, that is very viable. People can bring their own chairs. Very, very safe, much safer than Walmart, Costco. And, in fact, we have on our website a checklist, a safety checklist for churches for both the indoor services, for the outdoor services, and even the drive-in services. And that's available on our website for free. All our resources are without charge on our website, pji.org. If churches follow what we say, then they will be the safest place to be in America when it comes to this virus.
Hmm.
And that's what the churches and pastors, a lot of them, want. We provide that to them so it's irrebuttably safe for them to move forward, and they don't have to worry about false information about somehow singing being more dangerous than a cough or a sneeze.
Holly, thank you for the call here today.
Thank you.
Well, we've got Judith next in Clarksburg, West Virginia. Judith, you're on the air.
Yeah. You're talking about the religious things about churches. Now, our church has been having parking lot services. We will start in-house services this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you're going to talk about this other stuff tomorrow, but back on December the 5th last year, Nancy Pelosi made reference to the one world government, and from one world government comes one world religion.
Mm.
And right now, it looks like that the United Nations is pushing it pretty hard.
Yeah, and that, you're right, Judith. Tomorrow with Alex Newman, we're going to be talking about the UN program. Matter of fact, the UN has established a website now for the New World Order. That is there, and thank you for raising the issue. We know, Brad, this whole matter of religious liberty and so forth, there are those who are just trying to meld everything together and even putting churches on a guilt trip saying that you're going to cause people to die, you're going to cause people to get sick if you meet together as a body of believers.
Yes, and it's a guilt trip, and they're not using that same guilt trip on airports, Costco's and other places, Home Depot's. They're only using it on the church, and it's outrageous, and it's nothing that's that churches should succumb to. I do think, I will say this, churches, we now know, unlike in the beginning, we now know specifically who is at risk, statistically. And based on age, conditions, et cetera, being obese, overweight, those all factors. Those that have one or more of those factors I'm encouraging pastors to say, you know what, until we get things stabilized with this virus, I don't just encourage, I'm asking and requesting you, do not come to church if you're in those risk categories.
Hmm.
And that's a little strong for us. But the reason right now I think that's important, at least for the next, few Sundays, is we do not want to see stories coming out from all over the country of all these people in these churches that suddenly are dying or getting the disease. It's going to have a major backlash, from a political public relations perspective, even testimonial perspective. We don't want to feed those lies that somehow Christians are sloppy, dangerous people and churches are dangerous places. That's what the secular media society is giving. So I'm encouraging churches. One thing I do think they should be firm on is, if people are in that risk category, for now, at least, I would encourage them not to go to church and to have their online services maintained. And then we're also encouraging on our calls for churches with the deacons and the elders and pastors to have personal contact with every church member, but especially those who are at home after they start having their church. Home visitations are fine. Those are legal. Ring the doorbell, walk with your elbow, walk backward 10 steps and visit from the porch. Those are some things that we do think churches should do moving forward to prevent this from backfiring, and that is a definite concern.
Let's go to Lois calling in from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Lois.
Oh, well, years ago, I'm 93, and I'm blind for 12 years,
mm-hmm.
but I bought this book years ago, The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx, and he says, quote, the greatest stumbling block to communism is Christianity, and we must destroy it.
Yeah.
That's probably the reason for so much closing of churches.
Yeah, thank you for that, Lois. And Brad, indeed, there's been an orchestrated effort to shut down Christianity across our land, and that's why organizations like yours exist, is to fight for the religious freedoms that are not only God-given, but also that which are guaranteed through the Constitution.
Yes, and I want people also to recognize that whenever persecution happens, and Satan does this, that the church usually flourishes. We often have revival in such times. China, India, all across the world, the Middle East, and Iran is one of those incredible things happening. It's the most persecuting nature as far as countries. We have a great opportunity, as I mentioned earlier, with this new church homeschool co-ops, with churches rescuing children from the public schools across America. It's a great evangelical opportunity, churches, great church growth opportunity, and that's all because of the tyranny that we see that has taken place. And so there's opportunities also to minister to people in the church personally on the phone that would otherwise be awkward in the past. Now is not awkward. It's very real, and we need to seize this moment and this opportunity moving forward. We at Pacific Justice Institute are here to help.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of your calls. Maxine, you'll be next in line, so stay with us. We'll be picking up your call after the break. Open lines available here today at 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. We'll be right back. For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. The destruction of the family. It's been a goal of the cultural Marxist for, well, a few generations now. And why? Because they understand that the family is the incubator for passing on the values that maintain a constitutional republic and our liberties and our freedoms. John Adams understood this on an entry dated June 2, 1778. He said, quote, the foundation of national morality must be laid in private families. How is it possible that children can have any just sense of the sacred obligations of morality or religion if, from their earliest infancy, they learn their mothers live in habitual infidelity to their fathers, and their fathers as constant infidelity to their mothers, end quote. In other words, they understood that the value of right and wrong, the laws of nature and nature's God, the foundation of a constitutional republic, must come from the family. listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Brad Dacus with us today from the Pacific Justice Institute. Their website is pji.org. PJI.org. And again, a reminder that Zoom call that they're having Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, 4 Central, and a specific interest to pastors and churches. Let's get back to the phone lines. We've got Maxine from Prairie du Chien. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. We have struggled with a double standard. Our church was doing the drive-in services, but mm-hmm. our cars had to be 6 feet apart, and yet there was no other parking lots in town where cars were 6 feet apart, and we were even able to hold a funeral, and the funeral directors took on a lot of responsibility, and we all had to be careful, wear masks, and so forth. So I really give credit to our Baptist Church and Prairie du Chien for doing this. It was a lot of work. And another double standard, I live in a three-story apartment building for age and disability. We're supposed to stay 6 feet apart, yet there's no limit to how many can be in a small elevator.
Thank you. And there's been all kinds of double standards throughout this whole ordeal here. And thanks for pointing some of those out. Let's go to Prosser, Washington. Sarah is calling. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question. I was going through some of the RCW laws that are written in under the state of emergency laws here in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's RCW 43.06.220, and it talks about that these emergency orders can stand so long as the waiver or suspension would not conflict with the rights under the First Amendment. So I guess my question is what I don't understand is how these are still able to be enacted. Is that something that's written into those state of emergency laws that we have?
Brad?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. I will say this. Our attorney up there, Jorge Ramos, has been looking at all this, and we are right now examining it to see if we have the evidence to show unequal treatment. It's hard to contest it. The governor's action within the time frames that they have when they are basically heavy-handed against everyone.
Right.
The problem is when they're no longer heavy-handed against everyone but just against churches, that's where the First Amendment really comes out. That's what we're arguing in the state of California, and that's what we're investigating right now in the state of Washington moving forward. We have to time it properly. But Washington State is definitely moving in that area where it's becoming very blatant in their unequal treatment under the law. If you know of anyone up there that has any particular concerns or issues or things that have happened, please contact us at Pacific Justice or our website to maintain updates. We have something called the Legal Insider where we update everyone weekly.
Okay.
What's going on across the country in our cases. Please do that so you can stay up to date with what we're doing in Washington State in particular.
Awesome. Thank you. Can you tell me the name of the website again?
Sure. It's pji.org.
pji.org.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call here today.
If we can ever serve you, let us know.
Next to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Viola, you're on the air.
Okay. Thank you. It's obvious to the American people that we are losing more and more of our constitutional rights every day and have been for quite some time. And yesterday I was looking through some of my paperwork, and I came across a very handy little booklet. And it's, I must have ordered it at some point through, it's called freedomfactor.org. And you can order these little booklets, and it has the Constitution of the United States and also has the amendments and all the articles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people need to refresh their memory about what our rights are as American citizens. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying that I am going to order 100 copies for $40.
Viola, thank you so much for that. And you brought up a good point here about the importance, Brad, of people knowing and reading what the Constitution says.
Oh, absolutely. And it's knowing what their rights are. We at Pacific Justice have a number of free resources on our website, one called Church and Politics, which we're updating right now. Free download, all of our free downloads. Reclaim Your School, all about how legally evangelize public schools, and just all kinds of empowerment resources that are derived from the Constitution, our constitutional rights.
We'll tell you what, we're going to squeeze one last call in, then we'll get off the website again. Jeff in Appleton, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think we're seeing the results of not, like I went through school, through my 12 years of government school in the 60s and 70s, and I never had one class, I had a government class, but I never had one opportunity to read the Constitution, wasn't encouraged to read the Constitution. So what we're looking at is this systemic problem is Americans, pastors in general, we don't know the Constitution. We don't know our rights. If we did it on an individual level in this country, none of these things would have gotten anywhere near as far. And I'm not whining or crying. I'm just saying we're reaping the results of that problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, Jeff. Thank you for your call. Brad, if you want to respond to that in brief, we're down to a minute, and just take what do you want to leave with our listeners, but go ahead and respond to the caller there, too.
Yeah. What you said is absolutely correct. You know, overwhelming 99% of lawyers probably have never read the Constitution cover to cover, and it's not that long. The law schools don't teach the Constitution, just certain parts of it, and that's very disturbing. So you need to be aware of what you're doing moving forward. We have great resources. We have a great conference call tomorrow. The Civic Justice Institute does. Just go to pji.org. It's Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time, about how your churches can reopen and get around many of these roadblocks by intolerant governors across the country. We're here to serve. We do all our work without charge. God bless everyone out there who's holding dear to their rights and never forgetting to use their rights and freedoms for God's glory as we reach out to a nation that is in need for revival like never before.
Again, folks, the website is pji.org. For those without internet access, you can contact them at area 916-857-6900. That's 916-857-6900. Brad, thank you for the work that you do, and thanks for keeping our listeners informed here on Crosstalk.
Thank you.
Brad Dake is with us, president and founder of Pacific Justice Institute, covering a lot of cases they're involved in right now in the Pacific states, California, Oregon, Washington, and beyond. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.